Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture, and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Rush Limbaugh shared his comedy for years. Now you'll hear it here. It's the Rob Carson Show.
It is the Rob Carson Show. It's already Wednesday. Hello and welcome to the show. Please come inside. The interesting statistics today. 11% of Americans think that the economy has gotten better under Joe Biden, and 10% of Americans are paying close attention to the January 6th hearing. There you go. Bravo. Victory. Yeah, 11% of people think that the economy has gotten better. 11% also believe that Joe Biden or that Vladimir Putin is at fault for the gas prices. 11%. Okay, there you go. 11%. And then 10% of people, 10% of people in America are watching with bated breath the January the 6th hearing. There was one yesterday at 1 o'clock that I didn't watch any of. There have been four altogether, and the ratings have been diminishing faster than Joy Reid's. It's that bad. Faster than Brian Stelter's. It's that bad. Nobody's paying attention. Everybody knows that that the economy is Joe Biden's fault, and nobody gives a rat's behind about a commission going after a president who's been out of office for 18 months and had already been exonerated of any issues, any ties to any type of insurrection during the second impeachment, the second fraud impeachment. So while Rome burns, this is what fiddling sounds like. In case you're wondering, this is what the fiddling sounds like. While you're debating whether or not you can fill the car with gas or just put $20, which now buys about 3 gallons, about enough to fill your riding lawnmower, you know, whether to take that $20 and make it last until payday. And you've got Democrats in Washington, D.C., when you look at the ungodly violence that's happening around the country, murder rates are up around the entire country in inner cities, 21-year-olds, 15-year-olds murdered in Washington, D.C., murdered in New York on Juneteenth weekend. And you've got over 40 pregnancy crisis centers around the country vandalized. You've got terrorist organizations literally posting, as soon as Roe v. Wade is announced, hit the streets, burn and loot. It's amazing the left doesn't ever venture into suburbia. It's amazing that the left doesn't throw a temper tantrum outside of Democrat-run bastions that allow this nonsense to happen. And I thought about something yesterday. You know, you're kicking a pit bull. The left is kicking a pit bull here, and we are very agreeable most of the time. We are patriotic Americans. We are well armed physically and intellectually to defend ourselves and to defend our country. And when you say things like the night that Roe v. Wade is repealed, hit the streets, burn and loot, you know what I hear? I hear the sound of 400 million guns clicking. And this isn't an offensive threat. This is a defensive threat. And this is why the left doesn't venture into places like, I don't know, Olathe, Kansas, where I have my home, or Overland Park, Kansas, or Chesterfield, Missouri, or, you know, I'm trying to think of any one of the suburbs in Des Moines, or suburbs of Dallas, you know. I'm not seeing that marching into neighborhoods and trying to burn down houses and all that stuff and a smash and grab at the local whatever store in suburbia. You know why? Because America isn't down with this. You might be able to get away with it in places like Portland, which is hell on earth. But it's not going to fly. And we really are. We really are at our wits' end and our patience' end with all of this nonsense. And that's what it is. And then on top of everything, to add insult to injury, on top of all of the indignities being suffered upon us by the White House, by the Democrat Party, by big social media, they want to rub our faces in it. And they act like we aren't paying attention. They act like, oh, yeah, no. Tell them, despite the fact that Joe Biden for years has been saying that he wants to get rid of fossil fuel without thinking that most of the vehicles in the world run on fossil fuels and there's no replacement for any of them, with the exception of crappy little electric cars that cost way too much and don't go very far. No dump trucks, no fishing boats, no road graders, no bulldozers, no repaving equipment, no tractor trailers, no tractors, no four-wheel drive vehicles for farming. It's not what you think it is. It's a big it's got eight wheels on it. It's what plows and plants. And then, of course, there's the combines. None of those run on electric. And so what this administration has done is hobbled our entire country. It has driven many, many thousands and thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people into poverty in the last 2 years, first starting with COVID, and now this bullcrap. And yet January 6th still going on strong. And yet we're focused on your pronouns, using the proper pronouns when you join the Navy. We live in a vicious and cruel and awful world full of despots who don't care about you, hate American ideals, hate American success. Oh, those people are active in the United States as well, in the left. They want you dead, and they want our country as their property. That's the way it is. And we've got people in this country that want to make us weaker. They have people in this country who think we've lived too high on the hog. They've said this for a year. Barack Obama back in 2008 says, you can't drive that SUV like you used to. You can't eat what you used to. Because that's what socialism is. Socialism makes you exist with less, while the people in the upper echelons of power and those corporate giants who choose to bed down with the left, they become the new oligarchs. That's what this is all about, kids. That's what it's all about. Left wing. But despite the fact that you're paying an ungodly amount for your fill up in your car, it's $94 for the average fill up. Corinne Jean-Pierre says that we are not in a recession. I want you to listen to this real careful.
The president said last week that there's no inevitability around a recession, but there is a greater deal of market concern about exactly that. And I know that inflation is your number one concern, but can you talk about...
Yeah, inflation is your number one concern. Sure, right.
A little bit about if you're doing anything at all to prevent a recession or a rise.
Are you doing anything at all to prevent a recession?
So the way that we see this, and you've heard us talk about this, that we're in a moment of transition.
Okay, guys. Now, here's the deal. Just want you to chill out for a second here. Realizing, of course, that maybe your house is in threat of foreclosure, getting kicked out of your apartment or whatever and all of that. But, it's just a period of transition. It's transition.
We are in a unique situation.
Hold on. Our listeners get all stumbly and bumbly.
So the way that we see this, and you've heard us talk about this, that we're in a moment of transition. We are in a unique situation with
our... We are in transition and a unique situation. That's comforting.
Gains with our economy. The way that we see it is unemployment rate has held steady at 3.6, which is also near historic lows.
Yeah, you know what? That doesn't mean D word for Richard when you can't afford groceries.
Business investment remains strong. Household balance sheets remain strong.
Well, business investment has to remain strong because you drove so many out of business because of COVID restrictions and lockdowns, you doofus. Let's hear the money shot again from Karine Jean-Pierre. She says we're not in a recession.
And right now, we don't see a recession right now. That is not, we're not in a recession right now. Right now, we're in a transition where we are going to go into a place of stable and steady growth, and that's going to be our focus.
Yeah, that is going to be your focus. Okay, but there was something else was a focus yesterday and the day before it, I think. There's something else was a focus, and I believe 2 months ago you're going to cure cancer. That's another thing. You said you were going to cure cancer about 2 months ago. I haven't heard anything about cancer at all. What else? And then, of course, Joe Biden is going after the oil companies. That's another thing. I've got some great audio on President Biden. God, it's still hard to say that. President Biden giving the oil companies a little what for after hobbling them, after telling them he's going to drive them out of business. He literally is asking oil companies to up their production for the election. And then after the election, the abuse will continue. And here's the worst news. Here's some of the worst. Are you ready for this? I don't know if you're ready for this. Because trust me, we're going to have fun today. Trust me. But I'm just going to give you the lowdown on how you're being played. Oil turbulence could last 5 years. This according to ExxonMobil. So if you're thinking that maybe this will change after the election, maybe. Well, it might. But oil company executives like the head of ExxonMobil is saying, Darren Woods, by the way, says you're probably looking at 3 to 5 years of continued fairly tight markets. How that manifests itself in price will obviously be a big function of demand, which is difficult to predict. And here's the round room that the Democrat Party has put you in, and they've told you to go pee in a corner. They've given you an impossible scenario that they created that you're going to have to solve on your own. So they're going to drive fossil fuel prices to the point of unaffordability without thinking that the asphalt on your roads is made of petroleum products. And the plastic in your computer and your iPhone is made from petroleum products. And Nancy Pelosi, all that god-awful pancake makeup you put on your face every day is made from petroleum products. But there's the round room. Go pee in a corner, and we'll see you in a couple years. The number here is 800-922-6680. I've got more audio coming from Jean-Michel, Jean-Paul, Pierre, Ron, whatever the hell. Also, Joe Biden making fun of oil companies, going after oil companies. Lots of other things to get to, including the J6 hearing that nobody is watching. And, of course, your phone calls. This, my friends, is just the first shot fired. Yeah, I use that on purpose. First shot fired on an entertaining 3 hours of the radio program, The Rob Carson Show, and it continues after this.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
Here's to a record-setting president. Joe Biden setting record low approval ratings.
What the Democrats have put our nation through, it is a sad day.
It's the Rob Carson Show.
And right now, we don't see a recession right now. That is not, we're not in a recession right now. Right now, we're in a transition where we will...
It's not a recession. It's a transition. So when you're in the gas station, you're filling up your car, and it passes $85 where it used to cost $25. This is a transition.
We are going to go into a place of stable... And
that hamburger right there that was $2.99 a pound is now $6.99 a pound. That's a transition.
Steady growth, and that's going to be that's going to be our focus.
It's going to be your focus. Today, that's going to be their focus. 2 months ago, it was the focus on curing cancer. And then we're going to pivot to whatever, and they're pivoting to this, and they're pivoting to that, and they're really not doing anything. They're really not doing anything. Here is Joe Biden talking, and this is like classic abuser language. And the reason why I bring this up is because one of the things that I've been a champion of over the last, well, my entire career has been prevention of child abuse and just abuse in general. And if you look at some of the abusive characteristics of this this president, I don't think it's a stretch to say that generally if you abuse someone and then you lay off the abuse and you get them to come back, you haven't fixed anything because the abuse will just start again. And here is Joe Biden saying this to the oil companies. Joe Biden is saying, hey, I know, I realize that I told you that we're going to drive you out of business and that you're evil and that everything you do is the worst thing in the world. But what I need you to do right now, and I'm going to listen, the abuse is going to stop here, but what I need you to do is I need you to put out just in time for the election, and then we'll start again.
Look, we need more refining capacity. This idea that they don't have oil to drill and to bring up is simply not true.
No, they're not saying that. That is a freaking lie. They are saying that we are sitting on an ocean of oil. That, sir, is a freaking lie, which is another telltale sign of somebody who likes to abuse.
This piece of the Republicans talking about Biden shut down feels wrong.
No, you did. You did.
9,000 of them, okay? So then we ought to be able to work something out whereby they're able to increase refining capacity.
Until the election, then we will drive you out of business again.
And still not give up on transitioning to...
It's a transition!
Renewable energy.
Yeah, well, you know what? Again, as soon as you get that electric combine and that solar-powered 757, we'll start talking. But in the meantime, you're driving the airlines out of business, and you're going to be driving farmers out of business. And the American people are already suffering, and I can't even begin to imagine how bad things are going to get. Listen to this. One of Joe Biden's first actions as president was to cancel the permits needed for the Keystone Pipeline, which Barack Obama had done as well. Biden increased the royalty rate, essentially a tax rate on all production on federal lands, by 50% this year, the first hike in 100 years. It's only now that high gas prices have become a political liability for the president that his administration has pivoted to claiming the Biden administration is not opposed to fossil fuel extraction. And guess what? 54% of voters not affiliated with either party say it is his bloody fault. Here is the president with the audacity to make fun of the people who go out and spend their capital for exploration, for staffing, for the hard work, the heavy lifting, the digging, the extracting, the distillation of petroleum products so that we can all live. Here he is making fun of them.
Chevron CEO's complaint today. He said that your administration has largely criticized the oil and gas industry and at times vilified it, and that the administration would need to take a change.
In case you haven't heard that, she's talking about how the administration has vilified the petroleum industry, and the chief of Exxon is saying, you know, we're tired of the crap.
Change in approach in order to make progress on reducing energy. Okay,
get my question.
Do you have a reaction to that, sir?
It's mildly sensitive.
Here it is.
I didn't know they'd get their feelings hurt that quickly.
I didn't know they'd get their feelings hurt that quickly. I didn't get I realize that a lot of people are going to get out of work. I realize I put thousands of people out of work with the Keystone XL pipeline. But they need to quit getting so their feelings hurt about it.
Look, we need more refining capacity.
Yeah, we need a new refinery. Yes, sir. But why the hell should the private companies invest in a new refinery when you're going to shut them down after the election again because you promised you would?
This idea that they don't have oil to drill and to bring up.
And again, that's the previous lie. The previous lie that I mentioned about gas prices. Yeah, 24% of voters blame Joe Biden among Democrat voters as far as the fuel crisis is concerned. 46% blame major oil companies. So they're still towing that line of hating the big companies, even though the big companies do all the heavy lifting, spend all the money, and then ultimately provide you with a product that is affordable. Oh, yeah, and then they hire lots and lots of workers who pay lots and lots of taxes. Yeah, and then they make more little babies if they're not aborted by Democrats. And then they grow up to become productive citizens and pay more taxes. 20% blame Putin. That's Democrats. Yeah, 11% of us think the economy has gotten better. Unbelievable. And the White House says there's no recession. It's a transition. I think it's a transition. I think they should call it a transition. Yeah. Even Democrats blame Joe Biden for the crippling inflation rate, too. 8.6 annualized inflation, the highest in 40 years. It looks like 64% that say that Joe Biden is responsible. So the president is doing what he does best. He's going to promise a lot of things, including a 3-month gas holiday, which I don't know if this. It's 18 cents per gallon, so it's $3.60 on a 20-gallon tank full. If you do that for a month, you're going to save about $12. That's on top of you paying $200 more per month for the gas. So spend $200 more per month. The government's going to give you a tax holiday that'll save you $12, and he'll do that for 3 months. And then he's talking about gas gift cards. I think he should do gift cards. He could give out a lot more of those. This is the Rob Carson Show. Stick around. Don't you just love institutional ads for life insurance? Well, this isn't one of them. Hey, it's Rob Carson for Fabric Life Insurance. I know your time is valuable, but Fabric has incredible term life insurance policies that can be customized to your family, and you can be up and running in as little as 10 minutes. Fabric was built by parents for parents to make it easier to manage your family's finances. It takes less than 10 minutes to apply, see your quote, and then personalize it to fit your family's needs. Fabric's new lower prices mean significant savings over other providers with great quality choices like $1 million in coverage for less than a dollar a day. I would insert a cup of coffee comparison here, but thanks to the White House, it's far more expensive than a dollar a day. Protect your family's future with Fabric. Apply today in just 10 minutes at Fabric.com/Newsmax. That's Fabric.com/Newsmax. Fabric Insurance Agency policies issued by Vantage Life, not available in New York and Montana. Prices subject to underwriting and health questions. It is a Wednesday edition of the Rob Carson Show. If you'd like to write me, rcarson@newsmax.com, rcarson@newsmax.com. Also, the podcast is up. It's the Rob Carson Show. We've decided to extend it. You guys wanted more of the show, not just the 30-minute abridged version of it. So we're doing the whole show every day. Tighten it up. It's going to be really awesome. It is awesome, I should say. It's available right now on all of the usual podcast suspects. I don't know if you knew this, but Barack and Michelle Obama have just gotten a $20 million deal from Audible for a podcast. Yeah, it's going to feature them in 8 episodes each. For $20 million. This is the podcast version of CNN Plus. Except for they don't have to worry about ratings. What they did is they failed at Spotify. Nobody listened to them on Spotify. So I guess for some sort of either political reasons or maybe some sort of prestige or maybe just a fear, Audible's decided to ink a deal worth $20 million, which will lose Audible gigantic amounts of money. So the company will need to contribute 2 shows, or the couple, I should say, with an estimated appearance cap of 8 episodes each. So the move will give the former First Lady the scope to make less personal appearances than was wanted under the former partnership with Spotify. It's because Michelle Obama really hates the average American person. She doesn't. Have you ever really seen her down with the average American person, or does she and her husband kind of live above them in their $15 million seaside mansions in Hawaii and Martha's Vineyard? So the Obamas cut ties with Spotify after reportedly clashing with the streaming giant over exclusivity, how much they are expected to appear in episodes. They signed with the firm in 2019 for an undisclosed sum, but it's believed to be about $30 million, the sum scored by Prince Harry and Meghan Markle, and that did a face plant too. But no, keep doing that. Keep doing that, Audible. That's a genius move, $20 million for 8 episodes apiece to a show that they'll never listen to. You know, it was interesting. I was thinking about this. What is more threatening to our country? A ham-handed and idiotic advertisement by Eric Greitens or this?
Hi, my name is Johnny, and I use he, him pronouns.
Hi, and I'm Conchi, and I use she, her pronouns.
This is a Navy a video that they show new recruits about pronouns.
And we're here to talk about pronouns.
What is a pronoun?
I thought they'd say it together, and we're here to talk, and then both of them say pronouns.
She, her pronouns.
And we're here to talk about pronouns.
What is a pronoun? A pronoun is how we identify ourselves apart from our name, and it's also how people refer to us in conversations.
Using the right pronouns is a really simple way to...
Okay, great. Now what are you going to do if the country is invaded by sea? Yeah, because honestly, I don't give a rat's behind what you want to be called. All I care about is that you call your superiors sir, or I would presume also ma'am, and that's about it. Yeah, there are two pronouns for you, sir and ma'am, and they are both to your superior officers. Now, shut up. Let's go to... Do we have Barbara in Baltimore? Do we still have Barbara in Baltimore? Oh, that was yesterday. Holy hell. That's okay. Let's go to Scott. Hello, Scott. Welcome to the Rob Carson Show. What's up, man?
Hey, doing, Rob.
Good.
A couple things. One, I heard with my own two ears about 6 weeks ago, thereabouts, on TV, where a Biden official was on TV specifically stating, our goal is to put the oil companies out of business. I almost fell off my chair, but I haven't heard any reporter recite that direct statement out of the Biden White House. And number two, so far as feeling recession, you have these idiots that Biden has put into all these various positions.
Yeah.
They're probably making more money than they've ever made in their lives. To them,
Scott,
there isn't a recession.
Scott, here's the deal, and that is absolutely true 100%. I've been talking about this for years. Washington, D.C. never has to cut while you and I have to cut, Scott. I would assume that you've had to make some serious adjustments with regard to your personal finances, and yet Joe Biden is driving this on purpose, and nobody in the federal government is recommending that the government cut spending. They never have. They never will. So as you're sitting here going, I can't afford to fill my car, there's no talk about cutting the nonsense in Washington, D.C., Scott.
Exactly. And nobody reports how much does it cost to operate D.C. every year. What's the inflation rate in D.C. so far as all these people on payroll? I don't see Nancy Pelosi cutting back on her ice cream.
Well, of course they don't, Scott, because they live by a different set of rules. Because as I started saying about 15 years ago, we are living a tale of two cities. We have a bourgeois. We have a proletariat. We feed on the crumbs. And now, thanks to January 6th, we have a Bastille. And we all know how that ended. As far as people not saying anything about the Democrats being anti-fossil fuel, I've been doing this for a while. Here is one of my many montages of Democrats saying they're going to destroy fossil fuel, and now they're blaming Vladimir Putin for it.
Would there be any place for fossil fuels, including coal and fracking, in a Biden administration?
No, we would work it out. We would make sure it's eliminated.
So let's just end discussion about the cause of this now. This is nonsense. We are debating this. It is idiotic that Joe Biden would think that you would think that it is the invasion of Ukraine by Vladimir Putin when all of this was said.
No more drilling on federal lands. No more drilling, including offshore. No ability for the oil industry to continue to drill, period.
Now, wait a minute. The president just said that the oil companies are using excuses to not get... They're saying that there's not enough oil underground. That was a lie. I pointed that to you earlier. There's plenty of oil. It's just when you get abused every day and told you're going to be driven out of business, why in the hell should you put out before Election Day?
Exactly. I'm going to shoot and kill you, but meanwhile, could you give me some money?
I don't have any money because I have my son living at home, and he's eating us out of house and home. But thanks for the call. Let's go to Liz. Liz in Delaware. Hello, Liz. And despite the president being from Delaware and claiming home ownership there, I love the state. What's on your mind today, Liz?
Well, thank you very much, and I do hang my head low. I wanted to know, on the federal gas tax relief, people that drive cars that use gas are contributing to the highway fund. That's the purpose, I believe, for that federal gas tax. How are people that are driving electric cars paying for the roads they're using?
That is a good point. I have not had the chance to ponder that, because there is something right now where we don't tax some fuel, and that is for reefer fuel, which is the refrigerated units. It's the tank that hangs under the tractor trailer. I know this. I worked at a truck stop for many years when I was in high school. And then also for tractors, because they are not on the roads. As far as hybrid or electric vehicles, I am not sure. I will look into it, Liz. But they certainly should pay some sort of price for driving that electric vehicle.
And but, I'm sure they would want to, Rob.
Of course they would, Liz. Of course they would. But, Liz, did you realize also that the intentional driving of fossil fuels through the ceiling has hobbled Joe Biden's massive spending package for infrastructure, which was the cause of all the inflation? You heard about that, right?
Right, right.
Yeah.
And I also heard, although it was called the infrastructure bill, only 10% of the proceeds were actually going to infrastructure.
Of course, only 10%. So in other words, Liz, if you're thinking that all of those infrastructure programs and all of that stuff that's going to happen, we're going to be driving on roads paved with gold, none of it's going to get done. And now they have an excuse. So they're not going to blame themselves. They're not going to blame their policies with regard to fossil fuels. What ultimately they will end up doing when none of the stuff gets done is they'll either blow it off or say the programs were not shovel ready, like Barack Obama did with almost $1 trillion of our money when he was the president. Now they're probably going to blame fossil fuel for it, Liz.
Well, like you say, Rob, I'm not buying stupid today.
Thank you very much. We are all full. Thank you very much. Liz, where do you live in Delaware, by the way?
Bridgeville.
Where's Bridgeville?
Have you heard? It's I guess a little town, but it's on the way to the beach.
I've probably been through there many times.
It's a little south of Dover, but north of
Dover. You know, it's kind of funny because I like to say that when you're getting close to the shore in Delaware, it's like Iowa meets the beach. I'm sure you go from cornfields to beach.
We probably have more chicken houses. I'm not sure, though.
I don't know about that. Thanks for the phone call there, Liz. Do appreciate it. Yeah. And then on top of everything else. The dear leader who's going to give us the gas cards. He's going to give us gas cards. The dear leader is going to bequeath us with gas cards to pay for our gas. This is so stupid. I mean, dear God in heaven. It's literally like walking up to someone, putting a 44 Magnum. No, I won't go that big. Let's just go with a little 22 revolver. Peek right there. Just shoot you in the leg and then say, hold on, I've got this handled. Let me get a Band-Aid. That's exactly what he's doing. And then on top of everything else, the president is out yesterday bragging about this new CDC approval of COVID vaccine for kids under 5. And by the way, the chances of your kid under 5, between 6 months and 5 years old, dying of COVID is 0.03%. No chance at all. And most parents who are new parents, and I've been a new parent twice, thank you very much, I doubt that a very high percent of new parents who have freshly born little babies are going to say, you know, my child who has a 0.03% of dying of COVID really needs a vaccine, really needs to get that vaccine that's causing all of these maladies with young adults everywhere, particularly young men, with things like cardiac arrhythmia, things like that. But here's the dear leader talking yesterday about the glorious new vaccine for children that nobody wants.
We're honored to visit your clinic today. We met with...
And if you do, you need to talk to a pediatrician or somebody else.
Your fellow nurses and staff who are stepping up each and every day. And we met with families of young children. And
we're sorry we had to fire all those nurses who step up every day for not getting the vaccine that I demanded they take. Sorry you're out of work, but the rest of you, thanks.
There are about, I guess, 17, 18 families there waiting for the vaccine shots.
The vaccine shots. Shay, we've got to watch the vaccine shots. Here's the partial slipping a little bit of polygrit. This little polygrit right here. Good.
Just gotten their vaccine shots. And finally, COVID-19 vaccinations for children over 5 years.
This is a priority. This is big news.
...of age. Finally, some peace of mind. You know, this is...
This could save almost no lives.
Should I say under 5 years? We have over 5 years.
Six months to five years.
And historic, this is a very historic milestone. Monumental step forward. The United States is now the first
country. Oh, I wouldn't say it's monumental.
Country in the world to offer safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines for children as young as 6 months old.
Okay, I want you to listen to this again. Listen to this again.
This is a very historic milestone. A monumental step forward. The United States is now the first country in the world to offer safe and effective COVID-19 vaccines for children as young as 6 months old.
Now, you may recall yesterday in my interview with Dr. Naomi Wolf, who is a liberal, the other countries that are joining us in this 6 month to 5 year old vaccination binge, China, okay, Cuba, and Venezuela. That's all I need to say. Coming up, I'm going to share Joe Biden. He's already begging for money for the second pandemic. And Ron DeSantis says not only no, but hell no to vaccination shots for kids under five. Your calls are welcome. 800-922-6680. This is The Rob Carson Show.
If you're down with trigger warnings, you might want to listen to something else. It's the Rob Carson Show.
COVID-19 vaccines are now available for children under five.
This is CDC Director Rochelle Walensky.
With this recent authorization from FDA and recommendation from CDC.
This is almost a parody. When you think about everything that's going on and what everybody cares about, this is like a piece of political satire.
Nearly 20 million children are...
Here's a big announcement about something you could give a rat's behind about.
Now able to get vaccinated against COVID-19.
And new parents everywhere go, huh, no, I don't think so.
I know many parents with very young children have been anticipating this day. We now know, based on rigorous science...
And I don't know a single new parent who wants to get this stupid vaccine that they don't need, which, I mean, some people do, don't get me wrong, but not six-month-olds to five-year-olds.
...scientific review that the vaccines available here in the United States can be used safely and effectively in children under five.
And if you say anything bad about the vaccines, we will have you banned from social media because we're working with them. We haven't heard this in a while.
Take this jab and stick it. I ain't getting no vaccine.
This is Jim Gossett.
Joe Biden's stupid mandate. The dumbest thing that I've ever seen.
Especially for kids under five.
Biden says take the shot or go home. So I'm walking out the door. Take your jab and stick it. I won't take this crap no more.
Yeah, I think we're at that point. I really, really do.
Joe Biden's been in D.C. for going on 50 years.
Come on.
And now he's trying to bring us down, playing on people's fears.
The world's ending.
I've seen a lot of folks in D.C. live. I've seen a lot of pay to play.
They're getting rich in D.C.
Where Democrats have had it up to here. And now I got the guts to say,
sing along.
Take your jab and stick it. I ain't taking this no more. We still got a constitution that's worth fighting for.
I'm ready to fight.
It's my body, it's my choice. Ain't that what the liberals say?
That's what they say.
So take this jab and stick it. This is still the USA. Take this jab and stick it. Hey, this is still the USA.
Not the USSA. That is Jim Gossett, two S's and two T's. If you want to look him up online, it is jimgossett.com. Here is your dear leader saying that we need to plan for the second pandemic. And what do we need to do that? Well, we need your money.
At least this year, we do need more money.
You don't need D-word for Richard.
We don't just...
But you are one.
We need more money for vaccines for children eventually. We need more money to plan for the second pandemic. There's going to be another pandemic. We have to think ahead.
Dear God in heaven, man.
And that's not something the last outfit did very well.
Even though we managed to see 700,000 people die of COVID while they had 400,000 people and they developed a double vaccine.
Something we've been doing for fairly well. That's why we need the money.
Oh, I don't think you've done anything fairly well. Let's go to Sean in Live Oak, California, the home of KSEO Radio in California. Hello there, Sean. Welcome to the Rob Carson Show. What's up?
Well, I came across this documentary, and they grant the CO2 hysterics their false premise.
Yes.
That there's too much CO2.
Of course.
And they point out that cars only, if you grant them their false premise, only contribute 3% to the CO2 production.
Yes.
And electrical production contributes between 40 to 60%.
Well, now, Sean, that flies against the narrative, because Democrats say that you can power your electric car on unicorn farts and fairy dust. Sean, I don't know where you're getting your statistics there, Sean.
Well, the other thing is, if you're interested in this article, I can forward it to you.
Please do. Please do. What's it out of?
It's the Car Guys.
Oh, the Car Guys. Okay, I've heard of them, actually. Do that. Will you write me at rcarson@newsmax.com? I would love to check it out. But you're right. It is a gigantic lie. This whole carbon dioxide thing now suddenly is a poison gas, even though I just created some and helped to destroy the planet. It's all nonsense. It's all gobbledygook. It's just like saying it snowed too much today. So it snowed a lot today, so it's climate change. Oh, last night it rained where I live. We had a pretty heavy thunderstorm. Oh, it's climate change. Everything is climate change now. It's a giant flaming joke. Right now, carbon dioxide is the gas of the month. Actually, I think Joe Biden is the gas of the month. But I think this will change. It always does when they don't get their way, and it's starting to fall on deaf ears. So expect something new and as grossly idiotic in the near future. Let's take a break. You are listening to The Rob Carson Show. It is Rob Carson Show. Did you get a chance to watch Newsmax, the New York gubernatorial debate last night? That was pretty good. Eric Bolling hosting it. It got a little fiery. It got really, really, really fiery. If you get a chance to check out Greta Von Susteren's new show, I've been watching it the last week and a half or so. It started a week ago Wednesday. And Greta Van Susteren is up against Bret Baier. And I know Bret Baier, by the way. I've known him for a while. I got to tell you, I would much rather watch Greta. Brett has just gone off the deep end. There's so many things happening at Fox. So check it out. Greta's at 6 o'clock. Hour number two, Jenna Ellis. Jenna Ellis joins us at the bottom of next hour. And Ron DeSantis gives Joe Biden a little what fur with regard to childhood vaccines. Don't go anywhere.
Rush Limbaugh shared his comedy for years. Now you'll hear it here. It's the Rob Carson Show.
It is Rob Carson Show in hour number two. Jenna Ellis is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. She is joined as guest chief legal counsel for Doug Mastriano and his campaign for governor in the state of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvania will hopefully be run by a Republican. Maybe Pennsylvania can once again live up to the standards. I love Pennsylvania. I've driven through Pennsylvania many, many, many times, lived near the Pennsylvania-Maryland border. Love the state. It's just that the Democrat leaderships really make it suck. They really, kind of like California, it was Eden. It really was. And in the meantime, with everything going, we find out from Jean-Pierre Jean-Paul, or Pierre Jean, the new White House spokesperson, who's a cute little cuddly communist. She is basically saying that we're in a transition. It's not a recession. We're in a transition to stuff that's, you know, I mean, we're transitioning into Venezuela and Cuba, but we're in a transition. It's a transition. That's what we're in. So don't worry about it. It's just a transition. Let's focus about really important stuff, like, I don't know, the Navy using proper pronouns. Let's work on that. Or, teaching children about sex and sexuality when they're four in school by a drag queen. But other than that, it's a transition. It's a transition. You know, it's kind of funny. Say, for instance, you walk into the Democrat sandwich shop. Right, let's just use a real word analogy here. You're hungry for lunch. There's a Subway down there. There's the Firehouse Subs over there. And hold on a second. It says here, Democrat Party Sandwich Shop. Let's go in here. Let's see what they got. Well, okay, let's look up here on the menu board. Let's see. It says, I only see one sandwich. Is this just your board up here? Or do you have something online? Should I order online? Do I need to scan a code? No. We only serve one thing. Okay, what is it? Well, it's called a crap sandwich. Oh, okay. So tell me about the crap sandwich. Well, what it is a sandwich. And the core ingredient is something god-awful and repulsive that you would never consider if we weren't in power. But, I don't think I want a crab. But listen, you do want a crab. This crab sandwich is amazing. And honestly, you know, maybe we misnamed it. We'll call it the transition sandwich. So when you're transitioning from your normal sandwich, you can transition into this sandwich. Now, the main ingredient is a crab. But look at the baguette. I mean, look at this baguette. Look at it. I'm just stroking my hand along like it's a little kitty. Just, oh, no, no, no. Oh, yes, it is. Oh, it's a little. Oh, it's just a crap sandwich. But, I mean, look at the toppings. Look at the toppings we're putting on here. Let's throw a couple gas cards on there. COVID relief check. That was on the bottom, and it's kind of soggy now. But I want to put that on there. And, then we'll give you free vaccines for 6-month-old babies. We'll throw that on the crap sandwich, but enjoy your crap sandwich. You know, I'm cool. I'm going to go to Subway. I'd rather go to Subway. Thanks. Just back out, maintaining eye contact. Don't say anything. That's what you need to do when Democrats tried to serve you a cut up sandwich. Here is Ron DeSantis. He is the governor of the state of Florida. And if Donald Trump decides not to run for president, he will be the candidate and he will win. If Donald Trump is the candidate, he will be the candidate, and he will win. But here is what Ron DeSantis had to say to President Biden yesterday after the dear leader unveiled the glorious news. Not only that he would consider a gas tax holiday, which would save you about $3 a month on a $200 gas bill, but that little bit of babies can get vaccines that they don't need.
Not surprised the White House would lie. Definitely not surprised that legacy media would amplify the lie, because that's what they do. The state of Florida, they came out with an article saying the state of Florida has not ordered, its Department of Health has not ordered mRNA jabs for the babies. Yes, we didn't. We recommend against it.
He must hate babies. Baby hater.
We are not going to have any programs where we're trying to jab 6-month-old babies with mRNA. That's just the reality.
See, you can be a baby killer and be a Democrat. You just have to kill the babies before they're born. Let's go to Randall in Pacific Grove, California. Randall, hello and welcome to the Rob Carson Show. What's on your mind today?
Hello. I like that little musical number, and I was going to say when they come at me with the jab, I'm going to tell them from yes. My cold, dead veins. Anyway.
Nice. Right. What's up?
Yeah. Okay. I want to talk about... the war on fuel, the war on petroleum. Yeah. Back in 1977, National Geographic had a feature of some parts of the Bay Area that they had in the National Geographic. And there's a famous picture in San Jose, California. At the time, it was the fastest growing city in America. And there was a 4-level freeway interchange, 280, 680, and 101 merging together. I mean, it's finished now.
Yeah.
And it's like 4 or 5 levels high. And there was pieces of unfinished ramps sticking in midair with no connection. And that was a famous picture in National Geographic in 1977.
I think it was also used in the movie Speed when the bus jumped. That may be the same bridge, but go ahead.
Well, that was way later. Speed was in like, what, 93 or 94?
Yeah,
but,
go ahead. I'm just saying. Gotcha.
Well, they finally finished it, okay, and it's great.
Yes.
But what I want to say is that the Democrat, with the exception of Chicago in the 70s, which has an excellent expressway system, in my opinion,
okay.
They have the Democrat-dominated cities use state taxes and local taxes, city taxes, county taxes on gasoline, yet... The common denominator here is Democrat-run jurisdictions have the least amount of freeways, and they're not as big. And usually they are toll roads or they are turnpikes. And what I want to say is these Democrat-run areas, these jurisdictions, they tax. They have the highest taxes and the least amount of spending for the roads. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the California cities have, like, this gasoline tax and counties. And they have all these multi-layers of taxes for driving.
Yeah.
But the thing is they have the least amount of freeways. And there used to be double-deck freeways that feed right into downtown San Francisco because I used to drive them.
Yeah.
They even go between the skyscrapers back in the old days. Yeah. You have a double-deck freeway going between the skyscrapers. It looked very futuristic. Right. However, they've all been torn down. Mm-hmm. And I guess I want to kind of hone back in my main point because I don't want to get all muddy here.
Yes, please.
The Democrat-run areas have the highest taxes, but they have the least amount of freeways.
Yeah.
That's what boggles my mind.
Yeah, yeah. It's because they've got this kind of two-prong thing going. They want you to ride an electric scooter downtown, or they want you to ride mass transit, even though the mass transit system doesn't go by Home Depot, so you can pick up your drywall.
I studied maps of all the metropolitan areas in the country, and cities like Boston and New Jersey and New York, they have really very few freeways for that population.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Philadelphia is a little better. But you go down to Texas. You go down to Texas, they have awesome freeways.
Yeah.
Can I tell you a few jokes real quick?
I'm sorry, what?
A few jokes real quick?
No, I don't have time for jokes, but I do appreciate your phone call, Randall. Yeah, got kind of a circuitous route to your point. Maybe just take the exit ramp and go directly downtown on the plane. I'm playing, Randall. I'm just playing with you. Here's what's going to happen. And I had earlier Liz call, and she's like, what are they going to do if they get rid of all the electric cars or all the gas cars? And that's what they want to do. And again, they do this thing. It's make it so. Whenever the Democrats want something, just make it so. We shut down your baby formula factory, and we hobbled baby formula production, and we have to have our president beg other countries for baby formula. Make it so. Well, now they make it so, fix the baby formula factory. Not that easy to do. It's the same way with this. Convert everything into electric, even though, 3% of any vehicle on the earth might be able to run on electric. No dump trucks, no combines, no tractors, no airliners, no cruise ships, no fishing boats. I can go on and on. But this is the sort of crap that Democrats pull. And it always fails. It always does a faceplant. But Liz, back to your point, what are we going to do? They're going to charge you for every frigging mile. And if I'm not mistaken, President Joe Obama, call him Joe Obama, in part of the Build Back Better or whatever the hell it was, they are going to make it that every vehicle produced gives a GPS location of where you are and how many miles you put on your vehicle, and you will be charged for every freaking mile. So not only are you going to get screwed, it's going to become very expensive to own that stupid electric car, which is already prohibitively expensive to 90% of Americans because they cost $56,000 a piece, and you can't go to Home Depot in one. But you're also going to get scrawled by the government. Either way you go, it makes no sense. We got a little bit more from Ron DeSantis here. Here is Ron DeSantis, a good governor, and one of the reasons why so many people are moving to states like Florida and to Texas, by the way, from bleep holes like California, which used to be Eden on Earth. Here's Ron DeSantis running through a litany of things he's been right about.
But the other countries in Europe that are going a different direction, similar to the direction.
And by the way, he said the state is not going to mandate or provide vaccines for children under 5.
Florida's gone. They have been right on COVID way more than Fauci and his crew have been throughout this whole thing. Remember, these are people in Washington that rejected the idea of natural immunity. For a year and a half, they said
I have it because I got the virus.
Said that the vaccine was better than prior infection in every credible.
Just for all the really liberal Democrats out there, if you're afraid of COVID and you haven't heard about this, wearing a condom doesn't help. Just all you should know.
Study that's been done has said that
you've been misinformed.
It's not the case. And so they've been wrong.
That's for monkeypox.
Time and time again, they were wrong when they criticized
me
for having schools open. They wanted our kids locked out of school in the state of Florida. They were wrong when they criticized me for having businesses open, beaches, all these other things.
Yeah, he pretty much kicked butt.
And so this is an example where they are pushing this with very, very, very scant data.
Now, I have got a little bit more from Ron DeSantis and the lack of serious scientific consideration before approving this vaccine for your six-month-old. We'll have that for a second. And then the other day, I played a Spanish version of the song Convoy, because there's a convoy of people coming across the southern border, like the convoy to Washington, D.C. that truckers tried. Well, there's another convoy, and it is Hispanic, and it is people of color, and it's headed right to Washington, D.C. I'll explain what that's all about coming up. You are listening to The Rob Carson Show.
Driving snowflakes and candy aisle kids crazier every day. It's The Rob Carson Show.
In case you haven't heard, less than 10% of Americans are following the January 6th committee's hearings very closely, according to ABC News poll. So it's worse than that. It's worse than that. This, let me give you an example. How bad? This is like if Andy Dick and Kathy Griffin were a dancing couple on Dancing with the Stars. If they were the only couple on Dancing with the Stars one season, that's the kind of ratings that it would get. Andy Dick and Kathy Griffin on Dancing with the Stars, and maybe like have Joy Behar as the host or Joy Reid. That's the kind of ratings that this thing is getting. 10% of Americans are watching it very closely because they're the people who need that nipple to suckle on. That oh God, we've got one final chance at taking down Donald Trump. Please tell us what I need to hear. And like so many narratives that have been created by the left, including by people like Rachel Maddow, the viewers are going to be incredibly disappointed. Because when you promise too much and you don't deliver, eventually people kind of go, you know, I don't think so. I really don't. Adam Schiff, he says he has evidence again, but he said he had evidence during the whole Russia collusion thing. He said he had it. He's just holding it, and he never whipped it out, as it were. And even if he did, I don't think it'd be very impressive. Don't think his, it would be very impressive. Pollster Frank Luntz predicted, I mean, if it's anything like his neck, pollster Frank Luntz predicted Sunday, All right, here we go. So Frank Luntz predicted on Sunday that the January 6th hearings will not help Democrats improve their standing with voters ahead of the 2022. But that's okay. That's what Roe v. Wade's for. But that's not going to work either. First, voters are not going to be persuaded to support Democrats because of the one-sided nature of the hearings for the House January 6th committee. In fact, has not called a single witness who counters the committee's narrative to testify publicly. This worked in Russia because they had Pravda and Izvestia. This works in places like North Korea and Cuba because they don't have a First Amendment. Obviously, we do have a state-run media, largely, don't get me wrong, but they weren't able to kill everybody. They weren't able to kill off all the conservative voices by collaborating with big social media and the Democrat Party and the mainstream media. They weren't able to. So, unlike in North Korea, this whole control thing is not working. People will find a way. It's like the Jurassic Park dinosaurs. You know, they're all female, but nature finds a way. You know, we find a way in a country that has the First Amendment to find the truth. It's weird that way. The committee has not a single member who represents former President Donald Trump. That is true. Luntz said you should have had counter-testimony. You should have had people challenging these witnesses. Well, you could have had Jim Jordan as one of the Republicans, but they chose rhinos from hell. The conclusion that some people have come to is that this is simply the third attempt to impeach Donald Trump, and it is. It's a giant face plant. It is a giant turd that cannot be polished. Now, we had talked about Ron DeSantis. He's saying no to this nonsense with regard to a vaccine for children 6 months to 5 years of age. It is ridiculous. We should not be able to, should not subject our children to this, because the chances of death in a child that's 6 months old of COVID, unless they have a massive pre-existing condition, is 0.03%. Here is Ron DeSantis talking about the enormous amount of evidence that the CDC skipped over for a quick approval because ka-ching.
I think what happened was they thought somehow we would like be embarrassed by that. No, we're following the data. You look at these European countries, they are, a lot of them don't even allow Moderna for under age 30, or they recommend against it. So that was always that. We still have not ordered it. We're not.
Do I say the only other countries that have approved a vaccine for kids 6 months to 5 years are us, China, Venezuela, Cuba. End of argument.
Going to order it. Now, what they're saying is because practitioners and hospitals can order it.
It's almost like we're doing the same thing that those countries are to, I don't know, take over the population and control them.
Somehow we've reversed. I said from the beginning they'll be able to do that. We don't have the authority to prevent it. And quite frankly, if someone wants to make a different decision, I would just caution people, look at the actual data in the clinical.
So if you're having a child, you're saying that perhaps you should do your own research and then maybe ask a doctor who isn't a shill for the Democrat Party, like Joe Biden.
Trial. It is the weakest.
Did I mention the big drug companies? Yeah, that too.
Best possible data that you could possibly see. Very small number of people. What the recommendation is from them doesn't even track the outcomes. It was something that, but people can ask their pediatricians. They can ask their doctors. What's the evidence of protection against severe disease? There was none in the clinical trial.
Yeah, there is. There is that.
Era como la brisa, caminaba sin prisa. Era nueva en la ciudad. Labios de niña, ojos de arena, sus manos el agua del mar.
There's the Hispanic convoy coming
para allá. En medio de una tempestad.
It's not what you think.
Era como si el invierno regresara sin avisar.
Hey.
Ay, era su nombre si me dijo la verdad.
And it's glorious. Come on!
Aire que busca un sitio en el aire a donde ir. Y ahora solo necesito aire para vivir. Aire.
That is pretty cool. That is the Spanish version of Convoy. Now, I used this the other day because the Republican governors of Texas and Arizona are sending illegals that they apprehend to Washington, D.C. in a convoy. And it makes sense, right? And then I thought, no. This might be more effective with regard to the Hispanic GOP convoy that's coming to D.C. Now, I will share details on that convoy coming to Washington, D.C., and the inspirational story and speech of Myra Flores, who won a special election in a district that had been dominated by the Democrats since 18. Carson Show, and we have a special guest. We just got her on the phone. Jenna Ellis, can you see me? Can you hear me, Jenna?
Yes, I can. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Jenna. We're doing just the audio today. I apologize. Sometimes, you know how it is on broadcast. Sometimes you fly by the seat of your pants.
Totally.
My entire life is like that. So anyway, welcome to the show, Jenna. How are you doing, and how's working with Doug Mastriano in the great state of Pennsylvania?
Oh my gosh, it is so much fun, and we are seeing such enthusiasm across the state of Pennsylvania to bring back liberty, restore individual freedom, parental rights, election integrity, all of these things to the great state of Pennsylvania. Pennsylvanians are so sick and tired of the failed Democrat policies from Governor Wolf and, of course, Attorney General Josh Shapiro, who is running on the Democrat ticket for governor against Doug Mastriano.
Yeah.
If a Josh Shapiro were to get into the governor's mansion, it would be Wolf 2.0. And everyone in Pennsylvania knows that. They have seen what a disaster the COVID shutdowns were. They've seen the types of people that the Wolf administration, I mean, Rachel Levine in the Health and Human Services. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
This is basically, you know, the Biden administration localized in Pennsylvania. So everyone is very excited for Doug Mastriano. He's a proven leader. He was the first to champion the election integrity hearing so that Team Trump could actually put on some of our witnesses and our experts. And I've personally gotten to know Doug and his wife, Rebby, over the last few years. And they are just genuine American patriots. They're leaders. They're fighters. And I'm so excited to be part of the team.
You know, it's interesting because Pennsylvania and Philadelphia, the seat of our American governance, where the Declaration was signed, and yet they've strayed so far from that. The Democratic establishment has strayed so far from this in the state of Pennsylvania with big money politics, lots of union money, election chicanery, to say the least. And I know Pennsylvania. I lived in Germantown, Maryland, for a dozen years, and I got to know the middle of Pennsylvania and Pennsylvania Dutch country and everywhere from Pittsburgh to Philadelphia. And I got to tell you, all Pennsylvania really needs is a governor that believes in the state and the people of Pennsylvania as much as Doug does, and doesn't so much depend on the Democrat machine, which has been in power for so long.
Yeah. And, you know, that's so well said and is such a great point. And I think that, what we're seeing as well, across the whole country is that, you know, these types of machines from the Democrats that are just pushing so much of the dark money into, you know, some of these races and everything. This is truly for Doug Mastriano and for other, you know, really America first, pro-America candidates. This is a grassroots movement. And, you know, most, if not, I mean, significantly, almost all are very small dollar donors and people and patriots, even outside of Pennsylvania, that just see how much he wants to follow the law and the Constitution, restore liberty and freedom to Pennsylvania, and support him. And I think that is where we need to return to in this country, is that we need to make sure that this is a movement of we the people, and we aren't only choosing candidates based on what the two giant political parties, who they want us to choose.
I've got a buddy who lives in Pennsylvania, and he is a small businessman, and he sells for one of these companies. It's a wholesale company, and they sell kitchens and furniture and all of this stuff. And my friend, his name is Doug also as well. And he has over the years, struggled at times, had very successful times as a businessman in Pittsburgh. And I spoke to him the other night, and he said, Rob, I want to hire, 10 people. I can only afford to maybe hire 5. And even then, I don't know what the future is going to hold, because our costs are going through the ceiling, mostly driven by the price of fuel. I'm sure you are seeing this across Pennsylvania with regard to cost of living, and not only a fear of where the country is going, but they're hurting dramatically. Average people are hurting terribly right now. And Doug is meeting these. What are you hearing from the average folks in Pennsylvania with regard to the future of the company, the country, and the state?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I actually had a Zoom meeting with a bunch of small business leaders in Pennsylvania who are very concerned about not only staffing their businesses, being told that they're not essential by the Wolf administration, being told that they have to force their workers to get the vaccine, and now looking at the cost of inflation, the cost of fuel. In Pennsylvania, they have something that's called REGI. It's an acronym for basically the Pennsylvania equivalent of of America being part of, the Paris Climate Accord and all of these different climate change things that Doug Mastriano has said, listen, on day one, everyone is declared essential. There will be no CRT in schools. We will be out of REGI as a state to make sure that Pennsylvanians aren't spending upwards of, 40% increase in all of their costs for, quote unquote, clean energy, which is just, part of the leftist move to control.
Yes.
So all of these things are important to Pennsylvanians, and way more that impact them directly that they're seeing now. It's not just a matter of mean tweets versus, you know, we can ignore what's on the news. It's a matter of, do I have enough money to feed my family? Do I have enough money to fill up my gas tank? Do I have enough staffing at my small business? I mean, these are things that people genuinely care about and are concerned about. And I think that's why we're seeing more registered new voters. We're seeing that independents are voting conservative. We're seeing Democrats that are switching their vote and saying, I'm never voting for a Democrat again. So I think with election integrity measures, making sure that we protect the vote, there is no question that Doug Mastriano will win in Pennsylvania. And even, Rob, a USA Today poll showed a dead heat right now, which is very bad for Josh Shapiro and just shows a rising red wave in the state of Pennsylvania. And I am so excited for a Mastriano administration that, as he keeps saying, is going to make Ron DeSantis down in Florida look like amateur.
I love it. And I've known Ron, I've known Doug for a couple of years. He is a fellow Gen Xer. And I keep telling him that Gen X is going to save the world. Nothing against millennials, Jenna. Nothing against millennials. But Gen X, we're the last analog generation. I don't know if you knew that, Jenna. I got a couple things to ask you as a political pundit, and I respect you as a pundit, as someone who is knowledgeable not only about politics but also the law. What are your thoughts on Myra Flores absolutely owning her district in Texas after 150 years of Democrat leadership? Do you see this portends not only a wave? They call it a red wave, nonsense. A brown wave, possibly, with regard to people of color coming to the Republican Party in states like Pennsylvania and others because of maybe being taken advantage of by the Democrat Party?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that this just shows that the Democrat leftist talking point, that they somehow just presume that if you're a minority, therefore you will vote Democrat, is actually racist and is actually very offensive. That people who look a certain way or are a certain gender, and I'm not talking about the 87 genders, I'm talking about the only two that we have, that, you know, if you're a woman, then you are just automatically in the Democrat camp. That's offensive to people who are saying, no, we get to decide who we're going to vote for, and we get to decide that we're looking at the Democratic Party, and they're going so far left, we don't like that. So we are going to use our vote in a way that we're not just monolithic voters. And so I think that that talking point from the left is going to be more and more shown to be the utterly false lie that it is. And we are going to see more of the Latino vote. We're going to see more of the Black vote. You know, more of the people who traditionally the Democrats have said just they're going to vote for us going conservative, because they're saying, no, we're rejecting that. And even if we were raised in a Democrat household, we're thinking for ourselves and we want to go with the conservative position because we love America. We love the American dream. We love capitalism. And we want to support the candidates that actually make sense.
You know, it's interesting because I like to consider myself to be a libertarian-leaning conservative. When I tell people about my views, I'm very, very pro-life because I was a fetus. I'm also pro-military, pro-border, lower taxes, lower regulation, and I don't give a darn about gay people getting married. If they want to, torture themselves like I have, they should be willing to. I'm just kidding. But honestly, who cares? Who cares about that?
I do. And let me tell you why.
Okay, go ahead. I think the government should be out of marriage. That's what I'm saying, Jenna.
Sure,
I have no problem. If you want to go to a church that marries you,
incentives.
Yes,
people,
go ahead.
Don't call it a marriage. Don't call it a marriage.
Okay.
Call it a civil union and say if two individual people want to have, you know, the right of survivorship and want to, you know, live together under a common contract, fine. But that is not a marriage. You can't redefine the term marriage any more than you can redefine what is a woman.
Well, I put it incorrectly. I think the government should be out of it. If it does come to the government, then yes, a civil union, certainly. As far as churches are concerned, that's where marriage takes place. And if there's a church that decides to marry people, that's their business. If you don't want to go to the church because they are pro-gay marriage, that's your business. Okay, so that's what I'm saying. That said, one of the things that really hit home for me about Myra Flores with her campaign ad was her and her family outside at a gathering. holding their hands and praying. Now, I'm not a fundamentalist. I do not like to proselytize. I am a Christian, though, and I am a deep believer in God, in my God, and that. But I think that meant a lot because of all of the nonsense that the Democrat is feeding us. Her ad shows the most important thing is family and community. And I thought that was epic. And the Democrats don't even realize how important that is, particularly to the Hispanic community.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we're seeing that as well in my home state of Colorado. I just voted yesterday in our primary for Greg Lopez, who's running for governor against incumbent Democrat idiot Jared Polis. And we're seeing that because, you know, Greg Lopez, who's part of the Hispanic community in Colorado, is getting a lot of support.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he has and is running on traditional American values.
Yep.
And, you know, family, faith, and freedom. He is a United States Air Force veteran, you know, and these things that are just so solidly at the heart of America that people do want to return back to. They don't want Jared Polis, who's the, you know, who was elected because, you know, woohoo, he's the first openly gay governor. Like, who cares?
Yeah.
That is not, we don't want identity yes. politics in that way. We want... Yeah. the true identity of America, meaning the church, the family, and understanding the principles of limited government to stay out of our churches, to stay out of our families' businesses,
yeah.
To stay out of all of these things. And yeah. we don't want to harness the pretext of COVID to tell church that you're not essential.
Exactly.
So all of these things that
exactly.
are part of the fabric of people who are, you know, in Latino families or people who are in, you know, Christian evangelical circles or people who've grown up in America, they understand the traditional family matters.
It does. It does. It's all that matters, actually. Listen, I greatly appreciate you joining me today, Jenna. Doug's website is doug4gov.com, doug4gov.com. It sounds like things are going well. If you're talking about a neck and neck tie for governor, that's like a 10-point advantage for Doug because you know the polls are skewed in Pennsylvania gigantically towards Democrats.
Yeah, 100%. And we're really excited. And, you know, we're just starting in the general election.
Yeah.
So anyone listening out there, please go to doug4gov.com. Even if you're not in Pennsylvania,
yeah.
please retweet him. Follow at Doug Mastriano on Twitter, on all social media.
Lovely.
Retweet, amplify him. We would love your support and participation. And also in your state and local elections, get on board with your America First candidate, get engaged, and definitely get out and vote in November.
I love the fact you're working with Doug, and I love having you on the show, Jenna. Have a glory. What kind of dog do you have? Is that a Labradoodle, by the way? What is that?
Yeah, it's actually my boyfriend's dog, but I love him, Howie, so he's kind of my dog too now. But so he is a mini golden doodle.
All right,
he's
I noticed,
my perfect little co-host.
I noticed that on Twitter. You know, you can't go wrong with people who love dogs. Have a glorious day, Jenna, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, Rob. Great to talk with you.
All right, you are listening to The Rob Carson Show. Back in a second.
Dissent is not disinformation. It's The Rob Carson Show.
Something strange happened in Georgia yesterday. I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to read some statistics. You can figure it out. Vernon Jones lost yesterday to Republican Mike Collins in the primary for the Georgia's 10th congressional district. Now, in 2016, Donald Trump won the state of Georgia 50% to 45. Republicans won the state in every presidential election since 1992 when Bill Clinton took the state thanks to Ross Perot. Remember that? Joe Biden, who did not campaign, won 596,000 more votes than Hillary did in 2016. In 2020, weird how that happened. And there were also, if I'm not mistaken, 2,000 mules who were taking all sorts of ballots to multiple drop boxes and stopping at Democrat headquarters around the state, refilling up with votes and then taking them back out. Oh, and then also in 2020, the counting stopped in Atlanta, and they said it was a water main break. And then they took out all these ballots from underneath the table in black cases and ran them through the counter a bunch of different times. And other than the fact that there was video evidence and all of that stuff, there with all these mules and everything, Joe Biden won. Sure he did. Anyway, that's it. We all know that ballot traffickers pushed Joe Biden over the top with 10,000 of ballots, but that doesn't explain 2022. Now listen to this. Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, who could not win his own district as a representative to the state convention, surprisingly won his primary 2 weeks ago over a popular Republican with 50% of the vote. Now, he was polling at 25%. That's kind of weird. Raffensperger won his primary with 52% of the vote to prevent a runoff. Brian Kemp, who was booed at the state convention, surprisingly won his primary in Georgia after a rally with Mike Pence, 74-22. And on Tuesday, popular conservative Trump supporter Vernon Jones, who just months ago would receive a rock star's welcome at the rallies, lost to his opponent Mike Collins, 76-24. That's just really weird. So if you want to believe the numbers from the polls yesterday, this would say that Trump has 24% support from conservatives in the state. And Donald Trump-supported candidates around the country have been curb-stomping the competition. What's the difference? Well, it's Georgia, and Stacey Abrams is part of the political machine. I'm just thinking out loud. Something's wonky with Georgia. And if I were living in Georgia as a resident of Georgia, I'd be a little concerned. Now, I want to get to Myra Flores and her victory Tuesday, last Tuesday, with regard to Hispanic voters moving away from the Democrat Party. I don't have time to get into it fully here before the top of the hour. I do want to mention this. The White House is blaming food shortages across the country on Vladimir Putin. Yeah, President Putin is, no kidding, weaponizing food. This according to Strategic Communications White House National Security Council Coordinator John Kirby. He says it's weaponizing food. And what did I tell you last year? I said that once COVID goes away, the next crisis will be oil, and the crisis after that will be food. We are seeing it now with regard to baby formula, with regard to tampons, which we don't eat. I hope you don't anyway. You're using them the wrong way if you are. Anyway, this is just a precursor of what's to come. Because the reason why they're already blaming food shortages on Vladimir Putin is because they expect them to get worse. They expect them to get worse, so they're playing the game blame out in front to get out in front of what's coming, and they know what's coming. Let's take a break. You are listening to The Rob Carson Show.
Who would it now?
Make sure to check out The Rob Carson Show podcast. It is called The Rob Carson Show Podcast. I know. Pretty cool how that works. Just go to Spotify, go to Apple Podcasts, go to iHeartMedia. Go to Odyssey. You'll be there with the Obamas. They have a new $20 million podcast there. And I'll bet, as far as bang for the buck, I think mine is going to kick theirs, to be quite honest. In fact, I know it is. Anyway, check it out, the Rob Carson Show podcast. Also tonight at 6 o'clock, Greta Van Susteren on Newsmax Television. Coming up, the brown wave coming to Washington, D.C. You're thinking it's already there because there's a whole lot of brown stuff that gets spewed in Washington, D.C. No. This is different. Also, Marjorie Taylor Greene is being legitimately harassed on Capitol Hill. She's speaking out finally. And they're now getting rid of naming buildings, not of dead people, but of living people. College students say Dave Chappelle shouldn't have a theater named after him. I'll share that coming up. It is The Rob Carson Show.
Rush Limbaugh shared his comedy for years. Now you'll hear it here. It's the Rob Carson Show.
It is the Rob Carson Show, and this hour we're going to talk a little bit about Myra Flores and the Hispanic wave that's coming to Washington, D.C. for the GOP. She is being joined by two other Republicans, Cassie Garcia and Monica de la Cruz. They have found themselves at the forefront of an undeniable national trend as they redden the three districts covering Texas' southernmost part. I don't like that red thing. I never have. I think it's a joke. It is a Republican wave. It's not a red wave. Conservatives are not red. Democrats are red. Communists are red. I've said since Barack Obama ran the first time, they changed red to be Republican because Barack Obama is clearly raised in Marxism. Because his campaign started in the living room of Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. So they had to get out in front of that and label the Republican Party red. Makes no sense. It's idiotic, and I refuse to do it. That said, there is a Hispanic wave that looks like it could be headed to Washington, D.C., maybe even a just a person of color wave coming to Washington, D.C., because what do the Democrat Party, what does the Democrat Party normally do with people of color? I actually, when I was in my my speech in Baltimore a few weeks ago, I said, what do the Democrats normally do when they with regard to people of color? And they said, well, what they do is they promise and promise and promise lots of stuff until Election Day. And then the day after the election, they get up and leave money on the dresser and never return until the next election cycle. And that's the way, and that's just the way they do it, kids. What has the Democrat Party done for black people? They did the Great Society, right? In the 1960s, I was an infant. Destroyed the black community, did its level best to destroy the Hispanic community, destroy the inner city, destroy lives. When you look at what's going on with murder rate in cities around the country, number one murder on murder rate is going to be black, then followed by Hispanic. There's a reason for that, gang membership, cultural issues. Maybe that's turning around. I think it is. I want to go to Howard in Perry Hall, Maryland, wants to comment about the Georgia election where John Raffensperger got 50-plus percent of the vote, even though he was polling at 25. Weird! And Vernon Jones got beat by 50 points with his primary challenger. Hello there, Howard. Welcome to the Rob Carson Show.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Glorious. What's up?
Georgia has open primaries, which means you don't just vote for Republicans only. You can vote for anybody. So it's almost like having their election. And what they'll do is they'll get all the Democrats to say, who do we want out of the Republican race to be removed because you're popular? And so they just go and vote for the person against them because they know they're a Democrat person that they like. They're going to get in anyway.
Yeah, that is true. And when you look at the amount of money being spent from outside sources during the last election, it wouldn't surprise me at all that Democrats pulled this in Georgia. And they got, and everybody's, how did the anti-Trump candidates win when everybody else, you know, is voting for Trump candidates? Well, it's clear. And thanks for clarifying. I do appreciate that.
Oh, no problem at all. Have a good one.
I appreciate it. So I had mentioned this, When I grew up, I was part of this first generation to be colorblind. Essentially, I don't know. I never really thought about race. Really, I mean, sure, I lived in a fairly lily white community in Iowa, Neola, Iowa, and really, really white because that's just where white people choose to live. It's an agrarian to live, I guess, agrarian community. Largely, people bust their butts from sundown to sunup. Kids frequently get up at 4 a.m. to go out and milk cows before they go to school, and then they spend all day at school. And when they get home, they help dad with the farm. That's just the way it is, and it just happens to be a largely white population. It happens. It happens. But I'll tell you, I was never raised to be racist. I've never used the N-word as a pejorative against someone. Have I ever said the N-word? Well, of course, because it's a freaking word. But that said, first generation to look at Captain Kirk and Uhura making out and going, who cares? Who cares? First person to watch Sesame Street with color, people of mixed race on there. Jefferson's, All in the Family, all of that. Nobody was offended by it. Nobody cared about it. My generation made Bill Cosby into America's dad. Who cares about color? That said, I've always loved to hear the immigrant experience. And like one of my best friends in the world was a cabbie. Because I always talk to Uber drivers or cabbies, particularly if they're from other countries. I like to know their story. Why are you here? What do you like to do? Why are you doing this? And I always get wonderful, wonderful stories. And I always talk to people who I can tell are from other countries to find out what brought them here. I'm curious. I'm that way. My mom was that way. And so I'm just curious. And one time I remember I was in Washington, D.C., and I guess this is very untoward and very racist of me, but there was a group of contractors in the home next door to me, and we really needed some work done in our house. And there's a high painting in this area that I will not get up on a ladder to paint. So I went over and I saw these guys painting, and they're all Hispanic, and they're all speaking in Spanish. And I said, excuse me, can someone help me with a bid on my home? And this guy stands up and he walks over and he goes, yes, can I help you? And I said, yeah, yeah, so let me, you know. And so this gentleman, who clearly is not a native, a person from the United States, he immigrated, he comes over to the house. And he gives me the, and I can tell he's very driven. He's really driven and positive person, and I migrate towards people like that. And I just, I got curious about him, and I said, don't take this wrong, but you were the first person to stand up in your group that spoke English, clearly saw the customer is an English speaker, and said, aha. And he says, well, here, let me show you something. And I said, okay. And he said, come over here. And he walks me over to my front door, and he looks out, and he points over this glorious F-150 truck that now he probably can't afford to fill with gas because Joe Biden. A glorious F-150 truck at the time probably cost $70,000, $80,000. And he says, you see that truck? And I said, yeah. He goes, the guys who speak Spanish, they drive the truck. The guy who speaks English, he owns the truck. And I said, oh. Now, this wasn't about Spanish speakers. This was about adjusting to the culture, accepting the language of the culture, and then recognizing that to be a really active participant as a citizen of the country, you need two things. You need citizenship and language. Those are the two things that bring us together. Citizenship and language. Then we sort out everything else. The Democrat Party has always taken for granted people of color. For some reason, a lot of that has to do with fear. They paint the Republican Party as racist and misogynistic, and they want to bust down the door to your bedroom and all of this stuff. Well, what the Democrat Party has painted it, has painted itself as everything that people in the Hispanic community, by and large, really, really are offended by. Whether that be calling people Latinx or Latinx, which is the ultimate just insult to the Hispanic community. Saying that, oh, no, you can't use Latino and Latina anymore. It's going to be Latinx. That's what we're going to do. So you start doing that, you little brown people. And the Hispanic community is going, you know, no, I don't think so. That's really stupid. And then Myra Flores comes along, and she's somebody you never heard about until a week ago when she won her election, special election for Congress, and was sworn in yesterday on Capitol Hill. And one of the things I noticed about her ad was that it featured family. It featured a family at a table holding hands and praying. Now, this isn't a religious commercial. This is about what's important. She also talked about the economy. She talked about what Democrats are doing wrong. But she included the family and her pride in her family. Here is Myra Flores on Capitol Hill yesterday, getting sworn in and speaking.
Madam Speaker, I rise today to give a voice to the voiceless, to say that the people who live and work in South Texas
have... You know what I think? I think AOC is a hino. I think she's a hino. I'll explain why in a sec.
I've had enough. We want to be heard, and we are tired of being treated like second-class citizens.
Hispanic in name only, in case you were wondering.
I was born in Burgos, Tamaulipas, Mexico. Sí, señor. And raised with strong values to always put God and family.
Oh, shut the front door. That's the opposite of the Democrat Party.
First. My father, Saul Flores, moved us to the United States because of the promise of America.
And he probably worked his fingers to the bone to get you where you are, and you're paying him back in a big way.
He told me, in this country, if you work hard, you can accomplish anything.
The Democrat Party doesn't say that. They say if you're a person of color, you have no chance because of systematic racism.
My story proves he is right.
Amen.
But right now, our people are struggling. They are taken for granted. That
leave the money on the dresser.
Ends now. And I'm here. I have risen from working in the cotton fields.
Wait a minute. She grew up working in the cotton fields. That is remarkable.
To representing...
I worked in every kind of field as a kid, and I wasn't, from across the border. She came here in abject poverty and made it work.
I have risen
from working in the cotton fields to representing the community I love.
And the Democrats want reparations for people who live today, for people who worked in cotton fields 160 years ago.
In the United States Congress, and I will give them a voice. I will use it to say our lives are not a game. Our people deserve to have opportunity, security, and freedom. And I will work every day to give it to them. I am a proud Border Patrol wife and a mother.
She can't be pro-border!
Of four young children fighting for a better future for them and for all our children.
Now, the Democrat Party,
Madam Speaker,
had a reliable base of voters and a plan for the country that the now Democrats are calling a white replacement. And that is when talk show hosts say that the reason why the Democrat Party wants to flood the country with illegals is to give them the right to vote, to upset the balance of power and create a permanent underclass. That's their plan. It's true. It's not about white replacement. Not at all. That's not it. That's what white people aren't afraid of that at all. But that was the Democrat plan. Well, now that plan is blowing up in their face. I've got a little bit more on this. Your calls are welcome at 800-922-6680. This is the Rob Carson Show.
For all those who are sick and tired of people moving to D.C. and spending their entire lives telling us how to live ours, it's the Rob Carson Show.
Texas Republican Maida Flores was able to flip a House seat in a special election. She'll be the first Mexican-born congresswoman, specifically along the border.
Why is she running as a Republican? Well, doesn't she know they're all racist and white supremacists?
The Rio Grande Valley, South Texas, where voters have moved 10, 20, 30, 40 points away from the Democrats and toward the Republicans.
40 points away from Democrats?
The result definitely underscores the Hispanic vote could be up for grabs this fall in ways we haven't seen.
All right, there you go. Let's go to Tony in Woodlawn. He has a comment on what's happening in Texas and what will happen in November. Tony, welcome to the Rob Carson Show. What do you think?
Yes, that's my question. The district is going to change. This is going to change to a Democratic district. And she's not going to be in the seat in November. So what's the big excitement about?
Well, Tony, let me tell you the big excitement. Did you not hear that that she actually flipped the seat by 40 points? I thought you should know that. Did you also, Tony, notice that Democrats right now are polling in favor of Joe Biden by 24%? So no matter what the redistricting that's happening, in fact, I would venture to say that if they do decide they're going to redistrict to benefit Democrats, the area where she is about 80-85% Hispanic. And right now, Joe Biden's approval rating is at 24%, and people in the Hispanic community have flipped that district by 35 points. So I think I've answered your question.
Okay.
Tony's going to laugh. Okay, Tony. What's funny about that? What's funny about it, buddy? Please, please.
You didn't answer my question.
No, I did. I absolutely did. I said, you said, what will you say when Flores loses in November because of redistricting? I said, redistricting doesn't mean D word from Richard because she flipped the seat by 35 points and Joe Biden is blowing it with Hispanics. 24% approval rate, Tony. I did answer your question.
Running that district in November.
What are you talking about? What are you talking about?
She's not going to run in that district in November.
Okay. What is she going to run for? Where is she going to run?
She's going to run in another district more favorable to her. Y'all don't keep up on this stuff?
Really, Tony? What is the district? Can you tell me the exact district number and the whole deal, she's running against?
I don't have the information to hear.
All right, thanks, Tony. Appreciate the phone call. Bye. You know, just if you're going to be smug about something. Have something to be smug about. You know? Have something to be smug about. She's going to go to Washington. I don't care what amount of redistricting is done. They don't need to redistrict at all, to be quite honest. She already flipped it by 35 points. So I don't know where you're getting your smugness with regard to what's happening in southern Texas. I would venture to say that I keep up on things a little bit better than Tony with your smug laugh. Let's go to Estelle. Hey, Estelle, in Santa Cruz, how are you?
Oh, hi, Mr. Carson. How are you?
I'm glorious. More importantly, how are you?
I'm good. Okay, Jesus. I have Jesus with me every day, and that's what's keeping me going with my faith. And for this lady, Myra Flores, that proves to you that with God, everything is possible. I am very glad. I am not Spanish. I am half French and half Portuguese.
Oh, okay. Okay?
And her dream has come true because of her family and her faith and hard work. The Democrat has used the Spanish people to do their dirty work.
Okay? Yes. Yes.
All the dirty work are done by the Spanish people because I know and I have seen it. They are up at 4 o'clock in the morning cutting Mrs. Pelosi's grass and the maids and the nannies and the babysitters and the home care. Yeah. So that's why this lady is proving to them, okay? Now yes. They are jealous. They want the computer job. Okay, they graduate from college and they want to sit behind a computer. The American, they do not want to go work at McDonald's. All the jobs are taken by the Spanish people.
Well, so and there was a... Estelle, real quick. Estelle, yeah, let me talk. Estelle, a couple things going on. First of all, yeah, you're right about Nancy Pelosi. She's perfectly fine with brown people when they are either radical leftists or when they're cutting her grass or when they have their little leaf blowers out there and they just come in and, oh, look, there's some Hispanic people over there building a house. Oh, there's... You ever notice? I mean, where I am, it's remarkable the heavy lifting that are being done by people south of the border. I encourage legal migration into the country, but the Democrat Party is completely happy, just like with the rest of the country, with Hispanic people from other countries coming here, living at the lowest standard, getting by on the crumbs, doing their dirty work, which is literally and figuratively, Estelle, and they hate it. They hate it when people who are authentically Hispanic with families who believe in authentic Christian values, when they win a seat in Congress, that's when their apple cart gets upset and they're no longer doing the leaf blowing and the roofing and all the other sundry work that Nancy Pelosi likes to see them do. Go ahead.
That's right. That's right. They use these people. They say we don't want them to come, but they want them to come because they're using us. I've worked hard cleaning houses and doing everything for me to survive in America. That's what I have done.
But you know, Estelle, but you never stopped dreaming about doing more, and you never stopped at, I'll be fine just doing this, which is what the Democrat Party is having with. Estelle, I got to go. Thank you for the phone call. Do appreciate it. Au revoir. A bientôt. Okay? She said she speaks French, or she's French. Anyway. So, yeah, there you go. Welcome to the fold. Please come to the party. Come to the movement in this country that embraces hard work and embraces people moving up as part of the great American melting pot. We've always been that way. It's not 1863. It's not 1968. And the brown wave is coming to Washington, D.C., and it will sweep out, people who just want people to be, feed on the crumbs. All right, last half hour of the show is right ahead. Do not go anywhere. It is the Rob Carson Show. I guess I've always felt a kinship with just people who do the stuff that most people wouldn't do. In our country, a good deal of those people are Hispanic people. People, I should say, they come from a country south of the border, Mexico, Central America, South America. And I've always felt a kinship. I grew up on a farm, and this is in Iowa, and You know, if I told you all the stories about my growing up, everything from starting really doing farm work at around 10 or so, you know, getting up at 4 in the morning and going out and walking beans. We had to walk beans. You have to go look for voluntary corn and beans, and I walk corn. And when you walk corn all day, you get these cuts on your arms from the leaves. And then I'd pitch bales and pitch bales. You lift up bales, big old heavy bales, can be 100 pounds, and you rest them on your forearms before you throw them on the truck. And by the end of the day, you come home and your arms are scratched up. I mean, it looks like some, you know, whacked out, bent out of shape, gender confused liberal self-cutting. But I did it by pitching bales. And I did all sorts of stuff, bridge crews and whatnot. And every day I never said, I want to do the rest of my life. Every day I'd come home, and when you, like, would shell corn all day. Shelling corn is the worst thing in the world, and we don't do it so much anymore. Combines usually take care of that. But shelling corn, sometimes you pick corn off the shell, and you leave it in a bin, and then you rake it in to be shelled, and the corn gets moldy and dusty. At the end of the day, you are doing this to get all of this the gunk out of your head after doing that. And you're so exhausted when you get done at the end of the day. All you want to do is just go home and hang out with your family. And that's never left me. And that's what I think the Democrat Party has left the hardworking people of America behind, particularly with this gas nonsense. They don't even realize the pain that they have caused. With regard to Maya Flores in winning the race that she did, special election. First Republican to win in more than 150 years will be the first Mexican-born congressman in America, not, of course, getting any major play nationally because she is not a Democrat. 85% of the residents in Texas 34 are Hispanic. Just 13% are white. The district, like much of Texas, has long been a Democrat stronghold. Biden carried Cameron County, the most populous county in the district, by 13 points in 2020. On Tuesday, Flores won Cameron by 1 point. All right. This phenomenon, particularly pronounced in the border communities of South Texas, which have pivoted toward the GOP in overwhelming numbers over the course of the last few years. 5 of the 6 biggest county level shifts to Trump in 2016 from 2020 were South Texas. In Texas, 99% Hispanic star county. For example, Trump marked a 55-point improvement. Listen to this. Liberal political scientist John Judas Roy Teixeira argued that immigration-driven demographic trends could bring about the dawn of a new progressive era, meaning bringing Hispanics across the country legally or across the border, legally or not, will mean a dawn for the Democrats like never seen before. But the experience of the past few years suggests that the left's confidence in this area was at best premature. To their credit, both Judas and Teixeira have backed off their thesis in recent years. Judas has been desperately trying to warn his fellow Democrats about the growing electoral challenges for years. Redoing the electoral math, a new essay from the New Republic. The writer admitted, I argued that demographics favored the Democrats. I was wrong. So to your argument from the very snarky and pompous gentleman who called earlier, if they redistrict this area, the point is moot because Democrats, I should say, Hispanics are moving toward the Republican Party in droves. And it's going to become painfully obvious. Let's go to Paul in Santa Cruz, California, the home of KSCR, a glorious affiliate. Paul, go right ahead, my friend. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm looking at the possibility that of Pence running in 2024, potentially in the hypothetically if Trump's not available to be running, because I think in some respects some of what he has been able to bring to the party appears to be positive, and potentially in reference to DeSantis, I think he seems to be more of a level-headed guy. But
yeah, well, Paul, you know, you can bring all sorts to the table. It's just a matter of people want to vote for it. That's not the case with Mike Pence. If you look at the polls, he's not even showing up. So, I mean, that's pretty, pretty big, gigantic
not
wishful thinking.
Not according to Zogby.
Because, Zogby. Okay, what is he polling at?
I believe he's at 23%, and DeSantis is at 27%. And
what's
then
Trump at?
Another one.
What's Trump at?
DeSantis is 11.5, and Pence is at 9.7.
Okay, Paul, you can believe that if you'd like, and you can cherry pick all the polls you want. But Mike Pence will never be the presidential candidate as long as Donald Trump lives, and as long as the current supporters of Donald Trump and Trump policies live. And that's 70 million people.
But I qualified that by saying, assuming he's not,
well,
Pence
I think
would be in a position.
I don't think that Pence will ever be in a position, as long as DeSantis is there, as long as Kristi Noem might consider running, as long as a host of other Republicans are running. Mike Pence has already screwed himself. He has about the I think he has the chance of winning the nomination for the Republican presidential nomination about as good as Liz Cheney at this point and Adam Kinzinger. But well, we agree to disagree, well, Paul. We agree to disagree.
Good. Have a good
we will
day.
See. I do appreciate you calling, though. I really do. Mike Pence is done. I don't know. If you disagree, call me. Present something other than a single Zogby poll that shows Mike Pence still behind. And all that Donald Trump has to do, if he decides he's not going to run, is say, vote for Mike Pence. Or not Mike Pence. Vote for Ron DeSantis. Or vote for Kristi Noem. Or I put my support behind whoever. Mike Pence will never get that. He will never get that. Right now, Donald Trump is the runaway favorite. Second is Ron DeSantis. Ron DeSantis is not a bully. Ron DeSantis is a principled individual who stands up to nonsense, like teaching children sex and sexuality at age 4 in public schools, and other nonsense, like making 6-month-olds have vaccinations for COVID. This is why Ron DeSantis rocks. Ron DeSantis isn't about mean tweets. Ron DeSantis isn't mean-spirited. Ron DeSantis is principled and strong and conservative. Mike Pence is none of those things. And Mike Pence is nothing more than a rehash. He wasn't popular in Indiana before Donald Trump added him to the ticket, and he won't be a viable candidate in 2024. Just my thoughts. But Paul and Santa Cruz, I do appreciate your thoughts on it. And then there's this. Just this last weekend, Donald Trump in Nashville.
Would anybody like me to run for president?
Yeah. Yeah. We just got to get past the 70 million people who support Donald Trump and the 40+% of all Americans who think that Joe Biden didn't get 81 million votes. Other than that, it's a pretty easy hurdle to cross over.
Yeah.
Dave Chappelle is one of my favorites. Love Dave Chappelle. Also, one of the coolest interviews I ever did in my life when I met him. I met him about 20 years ago in Cincinnati. One of the most amazing people. Just enjoyed visiting with him, down to earth. Well, he's decided that he's going to leave his name off the theater at his high school in order to avoid offending anyone. Chappelle made his announcement on Monday at the naming ceremony of the Duke Ellington School of Arts, his alma mater. Chappelle had donated money and helped raise money for a new theater for the school. He says it was pivotal in his development as an iconic comedian. The school responded by saying it was going to name the theater after him. Well, a bunch of little snowflakes who would never watch Dave Chappelle because, A, they're not smart enough to get it, and, B, they're spoiled little children. They decided to protest. And Dave Chappelle said, okay, that's fine. Some students at the school protested against the decision based on the controversy surrounding jokes he made that offended some of the transgender and LGBTQIA+ bully community. These kids didn't understand that they were instruments of oppression, he said, according to a Washington Post reporter. When you say I can't say something, the more urgent it is for me to say it. It has something to do with what you are saying. I can't say it has everything to do with my freedom or of artistic expression. Needless to say, he decided to avoid the controversy and not put his name on the building. It's going to be renamed the Theater for Artistic Freedom and Expression. It's kind of ridiculous considering that the school is restricting the freedom to name the theater after Dave Chappelle, its most successful alumni. At what point do we stop when we hear demands like this as adults? Presumably the people who are in charge of the Duke Ellington School of Arts. When are they going to step up and say to the Candy Isle kids, you're not in a position to demand anything. You're not working for a living. You're still being fed, presumably, most of you by your parents and insured by your parents, and tuition paid for you by your parents, or loaned, borrowed, whatever you could do to do this. And consequently, while you may have a right to vote, you may be able to serve in the military. But with regard to the naming of our Performing Arts Center, you're not in a position to demand a damned thing. You pay us to go to school here, presumably so you can get a degree and get a job. Now, STFU, that's what I would say. I am tremendously disappointed in this decision by Dave Chappelle. And I'm not pointing fingers at him. I just wish he would have said, nah, just go ahead and name it after me. He clearly thinks it's not a big deal that's named after him, but it really is. Because, how do I say this? He's Dave Chappelle! Let's take a break, come back for more of The Rob Carson Show right after this.
Say it loud and proud. Let's go, Brandon. It's The Rob Carson Show.
You know, here is why Hispanic and working class people are moving away from the Democrat Party. Aside from, I don't know, the war on fossil fuel, which impacts all of us and which is stupid on the face of it because there's no electric replacement for 99% of the vehicles that need it. Plus, there's no replacement in plastics and hair products and face products and all the sundry things that petroleum products do. Oh, yeah, and your streets made of paved with asphalt made from petroleum products. But here's Van Jones talking about the Democratic Party and Democrat Party. They're not Democratic at all. The Democrat Party and why they're chasing away average people, including people of color.
Becoming a party of the very high and the very low. If you pull out the working class, you've got people who are very well educated and very well off. Those people talk funny. Latinx, I've never met a Latinx. I've never met a BIPOC. I've never met, you know, all this.
Latinx and a BIPOC.
This is weird stuff that.
You go into, seriously, go into Baltimore, go into, parts of Baltimore, and just say, hey, any BIPOC people around here?
These highly educated people.
Or go down there where Myra Flores won by a landslide in her special election and say, hey, are you guys all, can I get an interview with one of you Latinx people?
Say, it's bizarre. Nobody talks that way at the barbershop, the nail salon, the grocery store, the community center.
They don't really give a damn about your pronouns either. And it's not because of a slight. It's just because they don't want to play along with your mania that changes every few days.
But that's how we talk now. So that's weird. And then the people who are very low down on the economic ladder need a bunch of stuff. You wind up over-promising, but we're going to give you reparations to people.
And then, the day after the election, leave the money on the dresser.
Bottom of the economic ladder, talking weird to appeal to people at the top of the economic ladder, and the working class walks away from you. That is the danger we're facing.
Uh-huh. Speaking of word salads, let's talk about Word Salad Cammy, our vice president. Jim Gossett.
Out there in California.
Come on.
Where politicians are on the left. Ba, ba, ba. Was a girl who helped Sleepy Joe with his 2020 theft. Liberal Cammy.
That out of that.
Cackling Cammy.
Jim Gossett.
Every fella in Frisco town says she got where she is cause of Willie Brown.
Do you plan to visit the border? Not today.
She won't go to the border.
Yeah.
Even though that's her post. Hanging out with the Hollywood left. That's what she loves most. AWOL Cammy. Her dereliction is uncanny.
Yeah.
Everybody says it is a shame. her excuses, they are so lame.
Ukraine is a country in Europe. It exists next to another country called Russia.
She's hoping that Joe Biden won't make it through 4 years. If Joe and Hunter wind up in jail, Cammy won't be shedding tears. Conniving Cammy, give her an Oscar or a Grammy. She said that it would be a shame if Hunter and Joe aren't on a chain gang.
Yeah, there's word salad, Cammy. Word salad, Cammy. That is Jim Gossett, two S's and two T's. Song originally made popular by Tony Joe White and then by Elvis Presley, by the way, Elvis Presley. Oh, and I did finish the documentary on HBO Max about Elvis Presley. Oh, my gosh. So good. So the best. I know almost everything there is to know about Elvis Presley. Elvis Presley, my all-time idol. When he died, I cried for a year. I was in fifth grade. I cried for a year. The best documentary I've ever been done on Elvis Aaron Presley and his life. Fantastic. Here's Joy Reid on MSNBC. She's a racist. And talking to Kamala Harris the other day about Ketanji Brown Jackson. She's the new Supreme Court justice who doesn't know what a woman is.
We all sat and watched the Ketanji Brown Jackson hearings.
And we all rolled our eyes and went, dear God.
In which she very calmly sat through what I think a lot of, particularly black women, let's just be honest.
Of course, because racist and race and the race thing.
It was brazen disrespect from senators like...
Nah, because she doesn't know her stuff and she doesn't know what a woman is.
Lindsey Graham, senators like...
And she's radical and, you know, likes to see child molesters get off with lenient sentences.
Tom Cotton, senators like Josh Hawley.
Other than that.
What did you think when you watched that hearing?
Here comes word salad, Cammy.
I will tell you, Joy, I experienced great joy when I watched...
She just worked her name in there. See what she did there? She did a little delay. Then she said, I experienced great joy.
This brilliant, phenomenal black woman.
Yes.
Jurist.
Yes.
Be so smart.
Yeah, smart.
And just cut through.
Yeah.
The political gamesmanship.
Well, she's just said so much here. No, not really.
That they were attempting to incite.
Yeah, that's what that
is. And she just was composed.
Yeah, let's go.
And as far as I'm concerned, was taking a whole lot of people to school.
Yeah. Elementary school, maybe preschool, but certainly not to law school. Yeah. Let's take a break, come back, and wrap things up. This is The Rob Carson Show. Well, that's going to do it for the show today. I made it through at least half of the stuff that I was going to get to. I hope you've enjoyed it. If you get the chance, check out the podcast today. It's called The Rob Carson Show Podcast on Spotify and iHeartMedia and Apple Podcasts. And it will feature, of course, Jenna Ellis, as well as my commentary and comedy, The Rob Carson Show Podcast. Have a glorious day. God bless you guys. And I will see you tomorrow. And until then, whatever you do, do not catch the stupid. See you then.